G'day, I'm Andrew Ruthven, for people that didn't hear. I'm talking about securing the DNS one zone at a time. This is a talk kind of introducing DNSSEC, some of the terms involved with it, why we actually want to use it, and some of the issues. And there are issues, so if you like issues, this is the right talk. I'm just going to start with a brief introduction of DNS and, you know, why we have it and what it's actually about. Who can remember IP addresses like that? You know, you can remember half a dozen, but half a dozen. Beyond that, you're starting to reach your limits, and especially discoverability is damn near impossible. How do you find out where Catalyst's website is? You call us up and ask us, and we give you IP address. So we used to use a host file to do that. It quickly became huge and unmanageable, and it sucked. There was an attempt at centralized management that scaled for a little while. It didn't really last that long. So some people came up with the domain name system, which is a mapping from easily remembered host names to that IP address. And the important thing for DNSSEC is it's actually a mapping from a key to a value. So you can go from a host name to an IP address, the reverse IP address to a host name. You can store phone number details in the DNS. Not many people do, but you can. And that SIP address will make you call Catalyst. So an important thing about this is that the namespace is broken up into zones. And those zones are usually at the full, at the decimal points, full stops. Decimal points, right. And control of those zones is delegated to the entities that actually have that zone. So what we've got is a globally distributed database where each person that's authoritative for that zone controls it. And, it's a globally distributed database. It's got replication, it's got caching, all sorts of fun things, which cause some issues. So what's right with the DNS? It works. People use it every day. I'm sure everyone in this room uses it more than once a day. It's scaled. Verisign, in their report from December 2007, estimated 145 million domain names in use worldwide. That's just domains, that's not host names. It's proven to be extensible. Extra resource record types have been added. We started off with the commonly used ones, A, MX, TXT, HINFO, CNAME, and extras have been added that we use all the time. SRV, SPF, DNAME, NAPTA, and there's more. This means that all of those things mean that the DNS is relied upon. It's invisible. How many people register a domain name and don't even think about the DNS? You just call up your ISP and say, I want a website site, and this is where it is. Most people don't think about it. But an important thing to bear in mind is that DNS as it stands now is actually insecure. It's pretty insecure. What's wrong with the DNS? There's a bunch of things here which are wrong or have issues. Response packets are limited in the size that they can be over UDP by default. There's an extension which kind of lets you get around that, but not everybody supports it. The non-existence of top-level domains. If you do a lookup for switchblade.local, which is my machine, that query is going to go all the way to the root servers every time you do a name lookup. It's not cached locally. That .local doesn't exist. Mostly it's using UDP and not TCP. This opens us up to various different attacks and routing issues and things like that. Network providers block TCP port 53, which is DNS. So if you try and use it, it just won't work. IPv6, that's going to add extra load onto the DNS. Every time you go to a website, if you've got an IPv6...
Excuse me, what examples did you go to network providers block port 53? Because that's right, DNS packets into the whole
thing. The question is the examples of ISPs blocking it. I did try and do a little bit of research. I've heard of this being a problem. I have encountered it at some customer sites when I was working for an ISP. But unfortunately, I can't actually recall exactly what the sites were and what's going on. But it has come up, it's been perceived as being an attack avenue, which is why some people are disabled. IPv6 will increase load, because this notebook's IPv6 enabled. Every website I go to, I do a v6 query first, and then a v4 query if that fails. So extra load in the root name service. No. When Unicode starts coming up on the DNS using IDN, phishing attacks are going to become trivial. People won't even know they're going to the wrong website because the host name looks right. There's active work going on preventing that now. And there's no data integrity. You don't actually know that the response that you've received hasn't been modified in transit, except for the normal IP header stuff. But that can be faked as well. And you don't know that the response you received has actually come from the authoritative source. Anybody could inject that response to you. So DNSSEC is about those last two items. It doesn't look at the rest of them. So what is DNSSEC? Why do we even want security? In this case, DNSSEC is about providing an assurance of trust. It's about building a trust path from the root, the zone that you're querying to your machine, so you can know that that zone is actually correct. That path can have multiple start points, and that's called the secure entry points. Ideally, that's at the root, so the very top level is trusted. Doesn't have to be. You could jump straight into somewhere down the path as long as you have the keys for that. Either on your workstation doing the queries or the recursive name server that you trust. This is all about being assured that the response hasn't been tampered with and has come from the correct place. And it's ultimately about protecting the end users. So how does this chain of trust path look? Basically, you start off, I should have brought a laser pointer, but I didn't. You start off with your machine. This is assuming that the root is a secure entry point. It's not at the moment. So I ask for a Catalyst website. I get some stuff from the root. I verify that with a key which has already been managed by someone, either my workstation or my ISP. So I can trust the records that have come from the root. It tells me to go and ask New Zealand's name servers. I work for a New Zealand company, by the way. We help manage the .nz name servers, so that's why there's NZ examples here. We query the NZ name servers. They say, no, we don't know about this, but go ask Catalyst. And they return back some other secure data. I'll explain what the DS things are shortly. And again, I can verify that response from the data that the root name servers gave me. I then go and ask Catalyst. They say, yes, here's the IP address. Go look at their website. And by the way, here's some data so you can verify what I've just told you. And again, I verify that using what's come from the NZ name servers. So you build up this chain of this trust path. Why do you want to do this? These are some attacks which can be prevented from DNSSEC. Name chaining, which is basically cache poisoning, where the data on your ISP's name server gets corrupted. Someone puts in the bad guy's IP address in there for your bank site. They don't even touch the machine, they don't come anywhere near it. But you query your ISP's name server, you get back the wrong IP address. You go to that site, and you give somebody your credit card details or your bank account details, and they steal all your money. This happened in 2006 to the customers of Rogers and Bell Canada for two banks. So this attack does happen. I'm not sure how much money was stolen, but even $1 is enough to be concerned about. Another attack is packet interception. So the DNS goes across the wire unencrypted, and in plain text, anybody can see what you're asking. And it's pretty easy to intercept it and return back whatever you want. Most resolvers take the first response that's returned. So even if you can then get another response back from the authoritative source, it's going to get ignored. They take the first one. Wow, those guys. They're all listening. Another one is ID guessing and query prediction. This is an attack which Bind was vulnerable to for a while. A bit of work's been done on making that less likely. In DNS, there's only a limited number of IDs used. Each query that goes out gets an ID. The response, the query has to match, the ID has to match, and the type of data being returned has to match. You know, it's not that difficult to guess. We're using UDP, so there's no TCP connection tracking going on. So, you know, you can just inject the response from anywhere. Kind of scary, really. A little bit more work than man in the middle, but still doable. I haven't come across any attacks using that, but I believe it has happened. Attacks that aren't prevented here, you have to trust someone. If you don't trust the resolver on your workstation and have the keys for the root server or your secure entry points on your workstation or your notebook, whatever, you have to trust your ISP or some other ISP. What if that server gets compromised and that returns back, you know, crop data to you? Tough luck. Denial of service attacks. In fact, it's talked about that DNSSEC will increase the vulnerability for denial of service attacks because the response packets are going to be that much larger. So, you know, security isn't a free game here. A little bit of history. Back in 1983, was when the DNS was invented. By 88, it was in widespread use. People were using it all the time. In 1990, Stephen Belevin discovered a flaw in the DNS. 5 years later, he actually published that flaw. It was quite interesting. He wrote the paper in 1990. In 95, he just published the same paper. He didn't make any changes to it. So it still said that there were 200,000 domain names. His vulnerability is what caused DNSSEC to start being talked about, because people realized that there was an issue here. It was open to attack. He successfully used the flaws he found to attack BSD servers and get into them. He had permission to do that, of course. So, DNSSEC first started getting talked about in 95. There were a few attempts made at getting a standard published. It took a little while to actually get there. In 2000, the Netherlands started doing a test shadow domain. Whilst it was successful, they haven't actually continued with it. They haven't deployed DNSSEC. But in our net labs in the Netherlands are a huge supporter of DNSSEC. They develop NSD, which is a name server, authoritative only name server in competition with Bind, and the LDN Society, which is for doing DNSSEC. A bit more work has happened on DNSSEC since then. In 2005 was when the RFCs were actually published, which define what DNSSEC is. The same year Sweden deployed it. So Sweden was the first DNSSEC TLD. And in 2006, Wright's done that for Inadra.arpa and the enum1s and all that kind of stuff. Last year, another four top-level domains that get added: Bulgaria, Puerto Rico, Brazil, and Midway. Midway has actually been their .mu, and apparently that's been revoked by IANA. I'm not sure what the details are. There is still a huge discussion going on here. The large zones are quite concerning because it takes a while to sign your zone. And if you're doing real-time changes, like .com's doing, yeah, you can't really do live deployments anymore. So they're actively looking at doing hardware offloading and trying to get that as fast as possible. So whilst IETF had a first read start talking about DNSSEC in 95, they had a meeting in 93 to start actually discussing it. And they highlighted the two key areas they wanted to investigate or have it protect: the data integrity and the origin authentication. They excluded encrypting, explicitly excluded encrypting requests and responses on the basis that the DNS is published data. So what's the point in hiding what you're trying to get? You know, if you're sitting on the wire watching, you see a DNS request go out and you watch for the next bit of traffic going off to the IP address that they just requested. Yeah, easy. And authentication was excluded as well. That's covered by a lot of name servers out there already. So digital signature mechanisms is what they decided to use, using private key pairs. This is all known stuff. And Just a little point, DevOps.sc was the first TLD to actually enable DNSSEC. It was only last year that an ISP actually turned on validation of DNSSEC. They turned it off the same day. It broke people's DNS. It broke it bad. And I'll tell you what happened in a little bit. So what's the benefits? To steal some words from Bruce's keynote, it increases the reality of security. It doesn't increase the feeling of security, because DNSSEC on its own isn't actually apparent to the end user at the moment. But the reality gets increased. Right. Whilst DNSSEC isn't about providing a secure data storage area, it's going to be interesting to see what applications come out of it when we do actually have a secure DNS and a secure way of getting that information out to places. It provides error detection because you know if the message has been modified along the way. And moderated domains like the government websites, maybe military, you know, schools, things like that which are kind of controlled, you can add some trust to those. So you actually know that you're going to go and pay money to the tax department. Who wants to do that? So there's a few components here. A little overwhelming. But it's not actually that too complicated. The where the actual crypto happens is the signers. All the zone files will get signed offline before they actually get published. They get signed on a hopefully very clunky machine with a hyper offloader. That then gets published to the authoritative name server, which does no crypto. It just serves up what it's got stored. Because all the stuff has to be cached and replicated out to all the different places. So doing crypto in real time isn't really an option. So you've got your recursive name server, for example your ISP, that might verify the signatures that are going on. The local resolve in your notebook, that might do the validation. Hopefully one of them does. Depends on how paranoid you are as to which one you use. The system IPI on your machine has to support DNSSEC because it's got to be able to pass up the application if that validation failed. Just returning an error saying, nah, that DNS, that hostname doesn't exist, go away, doesn't really help you that much. The applications have to support DNSSEC. They've got to make it apparent to the user why you're not going to go to your bank's website. If it just comes up in our hostname not found, you're going to get pissed off and try using a different ISP server, a name server. But if it actually comes up saying DNSSEC check validation failed or insecure hostname, something like that, then hopefully people might cotton on something going on. And that might increase the feeding of security. Before I said about the DNS being extensible, they extended it. They added some more record resource types. We have the DNS key, which is actually a public key that you're using to sign your zone. That gets published in the DNS. The resource record signatures are the digital signatures. Every resource record that goes in DNS has a signature that goes with it. And that's how you actually verify that you've got the right data. The dedicated signer is a hash of your DNSSEC public key, of the DNS key. And that goes up into the parent zone. And that's how you get the trust path going on. So if you want to deploy DNSSEC, hopefully your parent supports it. So move to Sweden. NSEC is the next secure pointer. That points to the next entry in the zone file. And that's what allows us to provide authenticated denial of existence. And I'll give you a bit more detail on what that means once I've shown you some examples. So that's the DNS key. That's for one of my domains, which I've been playing around with. You know, it tells you the DNS key. There's the numbers over there are parameters that say what kind of key it is, what hash was used, what algorithm, and then gobbledygook. If anybody can use that in their minds, I'm pretty impressed. So here's a resource record signature. So this is the IPv6 address for the NLNet Labs guys that I mentioned just before, and the signature that goes with it. So that signature is saying it's an RRSIG, it's for a quad A record, IPv6. Again, some parameter information to tell you information about the key. And then some important stuff here. The first string of numbers is the expiry date. Keys expire. or signatures expire, typically 30 days or 60 days. This is because of cache. This is to allow the caching to work, so it can get cached around the places, and we don't hammer name servers too much. We have the date that the signature was created, so it looks as though these guys are allowing roughly 30 days. The 18182 is the key that was used to generate the signature, and then the zone that actually created it, and more gobbledygook. Now you can see why we're saying that the response packets are going to get larger. You're going to get multiple of these things back in every response. You're going to hit that 512 byte limit pretty quickly. There's a DS record for my zone again. It's just a hash. It specifies the key that it's a hash of, 29713. I had a different key in the previous, other than the other slide. And the NSEC record. So this is the NSEC record for the start of the zone. It specifies the next record in the zone file, and these are the RR sets that are between, that are against live. So you can verify if any responses have been dropped. Authenticated denial of existence. Why do we even want to have a point to the next record? We want to be able to tell the users if a domain name doesn't actually exist. This is to allow people to, you know, essentially stop and trying to insert their fake websites, you know, www1.bank.co.nz or something like that. So we can actually say, no, hang on guys, that doesn't exist, and actually verify that. Now, we could sign those responses on the fly coming out of the name servers, but that's going to be a good way to burn that CPU. So let's pre-generate all of that. So that's what NSEC is all about. So what happens if you do want to query a domain name that doesn't exist, like meselbub.live.etc.gen.nz? You get the signed response for the start of the zone, because there was no other records before it, and the next valid record, which in this case is Cerberus. So this is the output from DIG. I've truncated a little bit to make it fit on the slide. So instead of just getting back a, sorry, that host doesn't exist, you'll get back a, sorry, that host doesn't exist, but here's the next one that does actually exist. So you can verify that that's actually doesn't really exist, that nobody's trying to trick you. What happens with that? Well, we just sort the zone file, insert the NSEC records after every record, and then you sign every record. There are tools that do this for you, of course, and they're all quite good. There's some extra DNS record, header records that are required. To get around the 512 byte limit, we need to use eDNS0, which allows you to extend the DNS packets. We also get the CD record, which is checking disabled. No, I don't want to do DNSSEC. Don't worry, I trust everybody, is what that says. AD is authenticated data. That's in the response coming back to you saying, yes, it's been authenticated, trust it. Go on, you know, you can trust me. Issues, yeah. There's almost more issues than there are details about how DNSSEC works. That's a bit of a worry. Signing the root. Politics. Oh, don't you just love politics? Who do you trust? Do you trust the US government? They want you to. They want to have control of the root. Basically, what this is all about is who signs the very first record in the zone. Who signs the records that say .nz over there, Iran is over there, Australia is down there. That's what this is all about. It seems like a great way, if you're going to go to war with the country, remove their DNSSEC signatures. Break their zone. So this is a bit of an issue. There are some stopgap measures. Now, I'm sure there are a lot of countries that are quite happy with the US having control. There are others that aren't. There are some stopgap measures. We can use a thing called DNSSEC look-aside validation. That lets you do DNSSEC today, and I'll cover that a little bit soon. You can manually manage the keys. I can say, here's the public key for etc.gen.nz, which is my domain. Put it into your resolvers. Of course, in 6 months' time, when I generate a new key, I've got to give it to you again. This seems like we're back at the host problem, host file problem. Unscalable, totally unscalable. There's a few proposals out there which involve having multiple parties sign the route, about having different trust parties, various different parties working together, using IANA to do it, ICANN. Things are being talked about. It's a lot of people want to have this happen, so it's been thought about by a lot of very bright people. But there's general disagreement about the best way forward, as always. It wouldn't be the internet if there wasn't disagreement, would it? So the DLV, you know, we won't start doing DNSSEC yesterday, or a few of us do, we're quite interested in it. You know, even in top-level domains that don't do it, like .nz, where I live. So we could use a database to store these DNSSEC domains that won't do it, and their keys. You know, resolvers can check for DNSSEC first, and then it can go check this database. It's got to be reliable. It's got to be secure. We'll just use a DNS for it, right? It's good at this kind of stuff. So we store a hash of the DNS key, kind of like the DS, but a little bit different. And so when you do a query, you go and ask GNNZ, which is where I live, if DS exists. If it doesn't, you go and ask the DLV, which is, there's an example of a, that one works, you can query that, and you get back some data. That's another resource record type, DLV. You have to manually add and manage the DNS key for dlvisc.org. So we're back to manually managing keys again. But what are you going to do? So that's a trust entry point into straight into DLV issues. You've got to trust a third party. You have to trust the Internet Software Consortium, the guys that brought us Bind and DHCP. I happen to think that they're a pretty trustworthy kind of group, so I'm happy to do that. They have to validate the entities that are submitting these records. Because otherwise, you know, my bank, someone could decide to register my bank's domain name for DNSSEC with these guys, and suddenly, you know, they're providing broken DNSSEC for people. So validation has to happen. They're doing that. Zone walking, more politics. Those NSSEC records allow you to do what's called zone walking, which is another name for zone transfers. A lot of TLDs disallow that, have policies explicitly blocking it. The UK, Denmark, New Zealand, plenty of others. Those five TLDs that I mentioned earlier on, those don't care. They don't have the same security or privacy issues that these guys have. What does it look like? There you go. At get install, LDNS Utils will give you a tool that will let you do zone walking. I got bored at the DHCP starting to come up, so it's trivial, it's easy. In fact, there are people who generate DNSSEC deployment reports on a monthly basis. They zone walk the DNSSEC looking for new zones that have been added. So, but that's kind of been worked around. NSSEC 3 is coming along. That was a proposed standard as of December. It was a long time coming. I went through a lot of drafts, 13 drafts. It still sorts that zone first, but now it is a hash of the domain names. So no longer when you do a zone walk, get all the host names out. You just get hashes, which aren't that much use. Adds more resource record types. Great. Software support is in all the tools that we want to use. No, Bind, NSD, for Perl, NetDNS has it. The Python tools, yep. Yeah.
Why not
that would be sufficient, but you need to have some way of knowing where to start. Because that doesn't necessarily tell you that it hasn't been modified along the way.
You know, it's signed, but it does, right? You think that it's signed in
it? Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't really matter what the
entire
thing is, so why does
the authority hand out the
next record
while it hand out some data? That also has to go all the way back to the authoritative name server. Whereas this way it doesn't. It can just go to a cache and get the response back from the cache name server. So if you keep on hitting the same, you know, if someone here were to give out the wrong host name to all the delegates at the conference, it only hit the name server that's being used for the conference, rather than going all the way back for everybody that tries to hit that website. So So it's just all about trying to cache the data as much as possible. And also because the people that came up with this stuff didn't care about zone walking.
But then surely if you're going to send back a cached result, why not cache the dummy record?
How do you know you should be caching that dummy record?
Well, why not cache it always on the case of...
So I'll go to www2 and then www3. If you cache...
Sorry, isn't that why we have a negative TTL as well? So you can put them in Spyro and cache an estimate?
Yes.
Sorry, but I agree with John. I don't see why we can't just
assign
an estimate, set some expiration time.
Being able to hash it's not quite so bad. The zone walking is pretty, terrible. But those are some better questions. I'm not sure exactly on the response to that. We can have a chat later. So there is software support out there. It's not in production code yet, because it's only just become a proposed standard. It's not actually been ratified yet. Key rollover. Crypto keys have to be replaced regularly. Otherwise, you're not going to leave yourself open for attack. And you need to have procedures in place for if you do actually get the keys compromised. It's basically more politics, more policies, which is basically all what this is all about. Given the time, I won't go on to how key rollover works, but it's pretty much a solved problem. It's just requires you publishing two keys to the key signing key and the zone signing key. Good way to get messed up. Application support. What use is something like DNSSEC if the end users don't actually get told that the zone isn't secure, if they're getting back corrupted data? So applications kind of have to support DNSSEC and make that visible to the users. There are patches available for Postfix, CMail, OpenSwan, but those are all system-level things. They're not actually in front of the user. Some guys have written an extension for Firefox. It shows a little tick in the bottom right-hand corner if you go into a DNSSEC secured zone, but it doesn't do anything if you go to one that's failed validation. So it's a bit of a shame. And also, how do you handle failed lookups? What if it's actually failed validation? What if it's just that there is no chain of trust? If you're missing one of the keys between you and the end DNSSEC enabled zone, you can't validate that trust. How do you show that to the user? And how do you show that to the user without getting them miseducated so they go, oh yeah, there's no path of trust, I'll just tick yes to that. So they get used to ticking yes. Most users just click through SSL certificate warnings, don't they? What's going to stop them clicking through DNSSEC validation warnings? It's a hard problem, because this is all about increasing the feeling of security. Tell the users that they're secure or not secure. And this could actually be an issue for helping us get the transition period. Could be a major issue. Router support. This is what stopped that Sweden ISP from doing DNSSEC. They turned on validation, and the vast majority of their broadband users could no longer do DNS. It broke badly. So one of the guys that works there, Patrick Wallstrom, I hope I said that right, did a survey where he looked at 10 common broadband routers in use in Sweden, did a whole heap of DNS tests against them. Only one passed all the tests. The phone. I think that's kind of cool. They couldn't do all the tests on it because it doesn't do some of the DNS proxying that the other ones do. But that one passed. So everybody, go buy phones. The reasons for this? A lot of routers out there don't support that eDNS0 header. It's been around for a while, quite a while, but they don't support it. The larger packets cause issues, even over UDP or TCP. Some of them just stripped out the responses, some of the responses from the response packet. If you're using it as a proxy, a forwarding name server, they only gave you back the A record, not the RRSIG record. That seems like a bit of a downfall. And TCP causing issues there. This could be a showstopper for DNSSEC. How often do your, if your parents have got broadband routers, how often do they replace them? How often do you replace them? Now, this could be a big issue. Especially since getting the broadband router manufacturers to actually supply new firmware, fixed firmware, is difficult and getting people to upgrade. Here's the adoption map for DNSSEC. The green ones are countries that have actually deployed DNSSEC. There's not that many. The yellow ones are ones that are actually currently doing trials, are actively testing it out, so are the blue and purple ones. Red, here's a red one. They did do DNSSEC, they've stopped doing it. No longer, no, they turned it off. I haven't been able to find out why. And that's Malaysia, is that one there, and the Netherlands up in that big busy block. The black dot there is the right Inidra ARPA stuff, which is, you know, you can sign. It's quite a depressing map, really, isn't it? I hope they have a little pin down in New Zealand sometime soon. Not a red pin. Reasons for those slow adoptions. Politics! It's got to be, mostly. The root zone signing. No, people want to have, there was a survey conducted last year of a lot of the country network operator type people, and the vast majority of them said the root zone is why we're waiting. A few of them said the zone walking issue, but that's fortunately going to be a non-issue sometime soon. Sometime. I'm not holding my breath. A lot of the registries maybe don't think it's required. A lot of the users, the users aren't asking for it. If the registrants start demanding it, then it might happen. Same thing with IPv6. And the zone files are going to increase. So you need to have bigger pipes, bigger servers, bigger disks, although they're not that big. It just causes other issues. So let's have a little summary about where things are. Some potential future applications for this DNSSEC thing. No? Even though it's not designed to be a secure storage area, it could be a damn useful one. You could store your SSH host keys in the DNS. How often when you connect to a new host, do you actually check the fingerprints of the SSH host key? I know I don't, usually. Suddenly you could get that from the DNS, and it's signed. You put that data there, so you know it's trustworthy. You know, another way to get TLS keys out there. Let's try and subvert some of the CA cert repository type people. They're not CA cert, they're the good guys. Optimistic VPNs, that's been talked about for years. The big issue has been how do you deploy keys? We got away. I found someone talking about doing GBG, public key deployment using DNS. There's some guys actually doing it, there's an RFC about it. This could be interesting. Enum kind of requires it. You want to look at phone numbers, you want to know it's coming from the right people. You already get that with the white pages, so why not with Enum, with the DNS? Domain keys identified mail, that's actually all about adding a secure signature to each of your emails, which verifies it came from your domain. And RFC specifies DNSSEC as being required. So, summary, DNSSEC, it works, mostly. There's a few technical issues, not many. Mostly it's politics. It's mostly soft stuff. Now, it's technically feasible, but is it actually going to happen? Is it another IPv6? Is it only going to happen when people suddenly realize, oh shit, we actually really do need this? That hardware support, that could take years to sort out. That's pretty worrying. Now, I thought it was pretty much sorted until I read that report and realized how big of an issue it actually is. And that transition period where not every zone is signed, that could actually backfire hugely because people will expect the zone not to be trusted. They'll expect a warning to come up saying, no, I can't get a chain of a path trusted to that. So, no, I'm going to say there's a warning. And users will just get used to clicking through. Yeah, okay, that's fine. So, but that depends on how applications are going to handle these failure conditions. I'm not sure how they should do that.
or yep. Thanks find something that pops up the standard that says this is posted on number of chips. That would be something itself.
So, suggesting that the suggestion here is that we have a pop-up that says, this is a trusted site, this is your bank site, you can feel safe. Except that there's going to be a little tick box at the corner saying, never show this dialogue ever again. Most users will tick that and say, okay. They might not do it the first time, but I'm sure by the 10th time they will. Oh, yes. It becomes worse. Yeah. This is difficult. You know, maybe what we need to do as well is have a standardized way of doing it. Maybe the GNOME desktop, for example, should have a GDK type interface for doing host lookups, and that should return you back a standardized form or a notify thing up in the top corner that disappears after a little while. Because we're not just talking about web browsers, we're talking about email, we're talking about IRC, BitTorrent. All those applications that you use every day have to support this and make it visible.
Yeah. Performance and overhead, comparing apples to apples.
Yep.
If you conducted the same lookup, the same operation, once with DNSSEC and the other one without it, what is the payload difference? What is the client side?
Okay, so the question is, comparing DNSSEC to non-DNSSEC for the same query, what is the difference between payload size and time and effort to getting a response?
Processing on the client side.
Okay, so the payload is going to be bigger.
Yes,
fine. I can't give you exact numbers on that. I can show you what some responses look like using DIG.
Roughly. You must have some ideas.
Extra couple hundred bytes.
Okay.
Probably.
Depends.
Yeah, it depends on the key length that you're using. Standard's 1 or 2, 4 bytes.
Ratio should be linear, right?
Yeah.
You're basically just adding some headers,
signature. Yeah, a couple of headers and extra couple of resource records are getting added. So the RRSIG, you'll be getting an extra DNS key as the additional data, some extra that hash, and that's why they use a hash. I expect for the DS key.
Is the hash?
No, that's the hash of the public key. Yeah, so it's a smaller response that you're getting back from the root name server instead of inserting an entire public key. So try and reduce that size of it. But there are extra records. You know, IPv6 increases the record sizes as well.
Right. So I'm just trying to understand that whether that was part of the reason for not adopting. Payload was large and that processing would take a long time or error.
Yeah. So the question is the payload size a reason for not adopting? For some of the larger registries, I'd say so. Because they're going to see their traffic use increase quite a lot. Also, the processing time, if you're using your ISP's name server to do the signature validation, your client will probably see no difference in processing time. If you're doing it, of course you will. Not much, though. It's not that significant, I don't think. I don't think you'd actually notice the difference, especially on modern hardware. Yeah.
One more?
Yep. More information. If you want to get more information, there's a whole lot of links there. These slides will be going up on the website, so you'll be able to get to those. The top one is a website dedicated to DNSSEC. Really good resources on there. Check it out. The next one is in how-to. If you want to do DNSSEC, check it out. It tells you what you need to do, what commands to run, and some more of the actual concepts. It goes a lot more into depth. It's an 80-page document. But it's really good, really well written. Olaf, the guy that wrote it, he works for NRNet Labs. It's spot on. And there's other good info there. So, yeah. Any other questions?
So, any part of the DNSSEC relies on the client for certification or any aspect
that's critical? It relies on either the client or your trusted name server. You can use either. Yeah. Ideally, you'd use it on your client. But if an ISP wants to start providing secure services to their clients, then they can just do it on their name servers.
Why is it ideally?
Because if you don't do it in your workstation, you're trusting someone else. And what happens if the response gets intercepted between your ISP's name server and your computer? It can be changed then, modified then.
You can think about this place as how ISP. We've got wireless connections.
city between us and the guests. Then I understand my contention is in a network environment, trusting the client for the end-to-end security check, I think it's one of the early slides you just mentioned.
Yeah.
Because I'm a very good practice, it's not a healthy practice.
It's your choice. Fundamentally, if you want to do the validation on the workstation or your request for name server, it's your choice.
Right.
You can choose which one you want to do it on. It's recommended to do it on the workstations because it's end-to-end trust. But, yeah, you don't have to. Yeah. Question up there?
Just double-checking if I understand correctly.
Yeah.
If we turn on the NSX, if I turn on the NSX, I know. I run the risk of that large fraction of routers, like 30%.
Yeah.
We'll not be able to
work. Okay, the question is, if you turn on DNSSEC for your zone, you will stop 70%, 90% of people trying to validate your DNS from actually working, from being able to get your resolution.
Not trying to validate, but
just querying.
A non-DNSSEC client tries to
query
my DNS through one of these routers. Is that going
to
break?
No, that will not break, because only clients that want to do DNSSEC that set the one of the header bits will actually get the DNSSEC records back. Otherwise, if you're just a bog standard DNS user, you won't get the packets back.
You have to have a resolve that supports DNSSEC.
Correct. Okay. Yeah.
So, a couple of other resources that normally are used. The IT DNS option is a good place to work.
Cool. There's also another mailing list which is called DNSSEC Deployments, which is for people who are playing with DNSSEC at the moment. That's quite a good resource as well. Not a good chatter there. Sorry, yeah. Yeah.
Private zones.
Sorry, which zones?
Private zones.
Private zones, yep.
One DNS record, one DNS zone record that you can see through somewhere else.
Yep.
And a completely different one, you can see
through
out of the wide world.
Yeah.
The internal one, sort of
yeah. How do you handle
it?
Okay, so the question is, what if you've got a split zone? You've got one version which is for external use, which has your web server and that's it, and one for internal use, which has all of your internal hosts, and it's in the same DNS space, but you partition the views. Well, you've got two options. You can either not bother signing the internal one, because it's internal and you trust your network, don't you? Or you could actually sign it, and you could manage the keys on all the workstations, or use the same key pair as used externally, and just have that public key published, and I expect it will just work. Because you're still going to do having the trust path the same way. Just the same way that you have the name service for your internal zone being internal, but your main manager knows where to look for that zone. So I think that would just work. I haven't tried it myself. Actually, no, I have kind of tried it. For that live ETC DNNZ zone, it's actually a dynamic update zone, which I have an internal partition which is allowed to do dynamic updates. Only my internal network, and the external view is only doing DNSSEC. It's not allowed to do updates, but they're both DNSSEC enabled, and it just works. So it should be okay. Any other questions? Well, hopefully next year I can hear that a bunch of you guys have actually deployed DNSSEC, started playing with it, and maybe solve some of those issues. So thank you for coming along. I hope it's been informative.